Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up everybody and burn down the system. Fails the exit polls. Wake up the silence.
Welcome to episode 3 of the Star Chamber Show. This is one of your hosts for tonight, Steven Zimmer, and we got a great show coming up. But first, that first song was from, of course, Zero King, who kindly are letting us use that track as our intro. Of course, the guys are just off the cover of Rockwired magazine, which is a real cool thing for sure. And hopefully we're going to have Andy Hott on the show, the lead singer, to talk a little bit about heavy metal and fantasy and horror and all kinds of fun little fusions between the music and book writing and film worlds. But tonight we're going to have a man of many talents, Bobby Nash, who's a comic writer, actor. He's a prose writer. I mean, he does about just about everything, runs his own podcast. And coming up a little bit later, we'll have Alex Momcat from Alex Momcat's Gateway Book Blog. And so we're really, really pumped about that. But first, we'll give you a couple little updates. Of course, the show is brought to you by Imaginarium and also Tomorrow Comes Media and Seventh Star Press. Things are really busy on the Imaginarium front. I want to give you a heads up that just after the first of the year, artists and filmmakers, be ready, because we're going to be opening up the film festival and also the art show for Imaginarium. And, of course, all things in the film festival, award-wise, are going to center around screenwriting because Imaginarium is all about creative writing. So the awards will kind of center on that, but the film festival will be like a film festival and, you know, with a full screening schedule, and we'll have a lot of fun with that. And then the art show will be available to artists that are able to be on site for setup and teardown. But it'll be really accessible, won't be very expensive at all to participate and display your works, so be ready for that kind of news coming up. And then on the Seventh Star Press front, lots going on. Of course, we've got David Blaylock's big Angel Killer Triad contest going on right now with a $100 Amazon gift card and a couple of three $25 Amazon gift cards. So be sure to check the SeventhStarPress.com website for that information. It'll be a couple stories down on the main page. And also running is the Field of Fire 2 contest with a Kindle Fire HDX as the main prize, and that's a beauty. And then we also have a couple of $50 Amazon gift cards, massive book bundles, even including a ton of books from our friends at Black Worm Publishing with David Mattingly, the ever popular and fun David Mattingly, participating with us on Field of Fire 2. So I want to definitely give some shout-out, show some love to our friends in Black Worm Publishing. And so anyway, tonight's show is going to be great. And so I wanted to turn it over to our other two co-hosts for tonight, Cela Janelle and Michael West. And they're going to be talking to you about a few things about a new book release that Cela's gotten. And who knows, this is, of course, the Hobbit movie week, so we might have a couple notes about that. So let's bring you guys on. How's it going? Turn it over to you.
Hey, how's it going? I'm here. Michael, are you here?
I'm here. I'm always here.
All right. You're always here. You guys don't know this, but we just sort of live here on the phone all the time because we just love the Star Chamber so much. So, yeah, there's a lot
Something
going on. Actually... What?
I was going to say someday maybe it will we'll finally get the keys away from Stephen and we can leave.
That's right. Yeah, just locked in here. Apparently we never get away from them, but okay. We do have a lot going on. Actually, it's not a new release per se, but my co-author S.A. Girardi and I are doing a little bit of a holiday incentive for our book, Lost in the Shadows. It's a short story collection filled with shorts of all lengths. Some are kind of traditional prose. Some are flash fiction. Some are, traditional sci-fi and horror. What? That's like really short flash fiction.
Where is she going with this?
No, it's stuff of all sorts, and we're really proud of that collection. It's kind of like all the little weird niblets of ideas and brainworms put in one book, and a lot of different types of genres. There's some horror, there's some sci-fi, fantasy. There's sort of vignettes, there's more structured stories, some good stuff. And for this month, up until all month long, actually, we have it on sale on Amazon, the ebook, for $2.99. And if you would like to get in on a contest to win a $25 Amazon gift card, all you have to do is check out, I'll put the Rafflecopter up on the Star Chamber page after the show, but if you buy the book and review it for us on Amazon, you will get your name in to win the $25 Amazon gift card. But that's not all. Man, I should go into infomercials. We also, Susan and I,
a sham
we
wow?
have...
Can we get a sham wow?
Yeah, I got some wow. This ain't no sham. This is just wow. We have... Susan and I each have a holiday release. I think hers is under the name Siobhan Kincaid. Mine is under Sailor Janelle. Under our Mocha Memoirs Press collection, my book is Holly and Ivy, and hers is Under the Mistletoe, and I'll post those pages as well. If you buy either of those books, you will get a free ebook copy of Lost in the Shadows. So there are lots of opportunities to get the book, or you can get it on sale for $2.99 this month. Our short holiday pieces, mine's more fairies and fantasy and kind of folk story oriented with a modern twist. Hers is more, Christmas romance. So whatever you're looking for, you can get your warm Christmas fuzzies in, and then you get the death and destruction and the weird stuff of Lost in the Shadows free. So, you get a little bit of everything.
And if you buy 100 copies of the book, then Steve will come over to your wall on Facebook and write you your own personalized haiku. How's that?
That's right. There you go. So whoever buys 100 copies of the book gets their own personal haiku.
Right. I'll throw that in for you, Sheila. I'll throw that in the pot.
Steven, how do you say my name?
Well, I've got Jackie Gamber on the brain a little bit because of Reclamations.
Yes.
You got to forgive me because I've been saying Sheila and Sailor like 1,000 times lately. So
I just like teasing you about it. That's why my blog is Come Sail Away With Me, so people know, how to pronounce my name. I had to bust you on that.
We need to do a jingle and redo the Styx song with your
we
title.
We do.
That would
we
be cool.
We do. We really do.
Once you start it, then we'll have to sing the whole thing. We can't just let it
stop.
We have to sing the whole thing.
It's a long song, too. Oh, man.
Well, at the end, when they get the starship going up to the skies, it can go up to the seventh star. Get it?
Yeah, there you go.
We'll just sing the whole thing.
Oh, man, that's bad.
This is going to be a punny night, I can tell.
No, I know. I know Mandy Lynch is probably out there groaning already, but
probably. Well, Susan and I get enough flack but those who know us well know why we named the book Lost in the Shadows, and they roll their eyes at us a lot. But we are just two happy little geeks about it. So, and I'm not going to tell you why either. You can write it on the page and guess, and maybe we'll do something for someone who guesses right why we named our book Lost in the Shadows. So if you go to the Star Chamber page or in the chat room, if you have a guess, let me hear it, and maybe we can hook you up with something that way too.
Can I make a guess here? Or?
You can make a guess.
You're not going to tell me, though, if I'm right, are you?
I won't tell you. I won't tell. I may tell you privately. I'm not going to tell you if you're right on air.
Is it because of the Lou Gramm song from Lost Boys?
I am not going to confirm or deny that.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm just, okay. That was the first thing that sprang to my mind, but all right. Well, on my front, the hardcover, limited edition hardcover of The Wide Game is still available for pre-order through Seven Star Press. Only 75 were printed. They are all hand-numbered and signed, and they make a great Christmas gift, especially if you have the hardcovers of all the other Harmony books. You have to have the complete set. So, but there are still a couple available, and there's still time before Christmas. The book doesn't actually ship until January, but you want to order it now to make sure that you have your copy. And also, if you're around the holidays, we all like to help out wherever we can for different charities and whatnot. And I edited an anthology of vampire fiction, Vampires Don't Sparkle. And the proceeds from that book go to benefit cancer research. So you get a cool book with a lot of great stories by great contributors such as Tim Wagner, Lucy Schneider, Gary Brombeck, Maurice Broaddus, tons and tons and tons of great stories that you've been wanting ever since the whole Twilight phenomenon came and ruined vampires.
Amen. Oh, my God. We're taking back the genre. That's all I have to say.
Well, some good news for you guys. We've got Bobby Nash with us. And he's going to be ready to come on here in just a second, but want to give him a little bit of a warm intro before he comes on. First of all, Bobby is an award-winning author. He is also a writer of comic books and graphic novels. He hosts the Earth One podcast, or co-hosts the Earth One podcast. And as if that's not enough, he is also an actor with his first speaking role coming up in a feature film in Fat Chance horror comedy next year. So, anyway, without further ado, we will welcome Bobby Nash to the Star Chamber Show. Bobby, welcome aboard.
Thanks so much for having me, Steven.
Excellent. Well, first of all, you have a new project, which I know Sayla and I were talking about it a little bit earlier, and it's definitely some big news. So first, talk to us a little bit about the new IDW project.
Oh, yes. I have IDW has one of their long-running titles is called Zombies vs. Robots, which started as a comic. And there have been several Zombies vs. Robots comics. Last year, they started putting together a plan for a Zombies vs. Robot prose series. And to date, there have been four anthologies of prose stories. The fifth one is coming out in February of 2014, and that will feature a story of mine, and it's called No Man's Land is the name of the anthology. And I'm very excited. It's a very high-profile project, and I know there's a Zombies versus Robot movie in some kind of development situation. So IDW really has got one of those long-lasting properties on their hands with this one.
That's
awesome.
So cool. I was telling Steven earlier, I like want to be you when I grow up. Like, you just make me sick with how much you're doing and all the awesome stuff. I love IDW. That is so cool, and I'm so happy for you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, they were so great to work with, and hopefully I'll get to work with them again. They were really great, and it's fun. And I actually wrote this. It's been a little while, and they got all the stories together for all five books at one time. So this is actually
one
I've been kind of sitting on the news for a while. And as you know we hate to not talk about the things we've done. So.
Yeah. No, I know. That would kill me, but that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm kind of like Sayla. I've known you for a little while, and of course, you know, a few years, you know, seeing you on the convention circuit, I'm just always amazed at the amount of projects that you tackle. I mean, it's definitely impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, you're always writing short.
The one that, like,
Yeah, you're like the one that always makes me, like, check myself and be like, oh, what could I really be doing? You're like the really good incentive for other writers because you just make me want to, like, I don't know, just keep working harder and have something to go up against your stuff.
I think sometimes I'm a glutton for punishment.
But you're now an award-winning glutton for punishment.
That's very true, yes. That is very cool.
Tell us a little bit about the award you just won.
I won a Pulp ARC award earlier this year for best author for the year. So it was a big thrill. When they announced the winners, an anthology that I was a part of that I co-created with Sean Taylor called The Ruby Files was nominated for several awards across award season this year. So I figured we were just nominated in too many categories for that book, for the book not to win something. So I'm like, hey, the book won for best new character. And so I was all excited. And so I scroll down, and I read past the one that says best author, and I just zoom right past it. And I'm like three or four awards past it when I stop and go, wait a minute, what did that say? And I had to go back and double check it because I was stunned when I was nominated. Winning was just that one. It's not much that makes me speechless. That did it. Yeah.
Thing finally made you speechless. You got to be kidding me. Wow.
That did it. Yeah. It's it was a good 15, 20 minutes before I was able to, like, go, what?
You've done a lot of different styles of writing. Can you talk to us a little bit about the differences in craft and, like, writing prose versus your comics and graphic novel work a little bit for people out there?
A lot of the difference is certainly formatting. When you do prose, you know, it's you, it's the writer and the keyboard, really. The writer is, you have to set the mood, you have to do all the dialogue, all the descriptions, all the details. You are in a sense a one-man band when you're writing prose. When you're writing, and comic writing and screenplay writing share a lot of similarities in format. They're not exactly the same, but there are similarities. But when you're doing comics, you're just a part of the team. So when you write, most of what I write for comic scripts is stuff that the audience never actually sees. Most of what I write is for the artists to know the scene settings and all of those type of things, because the artist helps bring those things to life. And then with each artist, like sometimes you have a pencil or an inker, sometimes it's the same person, color, lettering, all of those factors can add or take away from the story. So the story, each of us has a little input that can make scenes stand out or slightly change things from what I saw in my head when I wrote it. Even down to the colorist, you know, a coloring choice can add an extra layer of emotion to a story that goes beyond, can take it beyond what the writer and the artist had in mind. So when you do comics, you have to really think teamwork. Yeah. But yeah, so definitely differences that way.
Very cool. Very cool. And, What's going on with you as far as some comic projects? Because I know you've always got something going on, so might as well update us on some of your latest stuff there too.
Sure. I'm working with some very wonderful artists that are in the process of doing the art on some books. There's Operation Silver Moon that I'm working on with Rick Johnson. He is putting the finishing touches on that, so we're hoping to have that out early next year. And that'll be a one-shot graphic novel that if it does well, we would love to come back and do more with the characters. And that's kind of a, it's a horror adventure story set in World War II. And Rick's art is just really just wowing me. There's also Bloody Old England, which is a modern-day horror comic, like a monster creature story that Jason Flowers is doing the art on. And then there's more Lance Star coming, just as soon as I, you know, get off my lazy butt and get it finished. And then there's a graphic novel called Strong Will that I co-wrote with my Earth Station 1 co-host, Mike Gordon, and Wendell Cavalcante, who is an artist out of Brazil, is currently working on the pencils for that, and we're hoping to have that out by summer of next year or so. So that's the comic projects coming.
So you don't really sleep, do you, Bobby?
not much, no.
What do you do? What?
Yeah. Well, with the comics, though, you know, because, you know, the timing, you know, I wrote most of these a year or so ago, and the artists are working the art around their other schedules. So yeah, sometimes it's a little misleading, but yeah, I'm always pretty much writing for next year's stuff, it seems like, so.
And speaking of next year's stuff,
I'm
always
thinking year ahead, yeah.
Yeah, we're all chomping at the bit about this, but I've got to sneak this in real quick, because I'm a huge James Purfoy fan. Did you get a chance, we're kind of segueing into your acting side of things, but did you get a chance to meet him? Because he's like one of my top 10 favorite actors.
I did not get to meet him. I did have lunch in the same room with him. I guess that's probably about as close as you get. I did set a table over from him. So I did see him in person. I did not actually have any scenes with him. And, you know, I'm mostly an extra. In like the following, I was an extra. And, you know, one of the big rules of being an extra is don't really talk to the actors unless they come up and talk to you first. So when you're working with them, it's a little easier. They're more likely to say, hi, my name is, or, you know, nice to meet you, or something like that. But, walking up to him at lunch and saying, hi, nice to meet you, you know, you generally don't do that. So.
No.
Well, I know.
No.
I'm a huge fan of The Following, so that was just super cool.
I had fun. I worked on that for 3 days, played an FBI agent, and we did the first 2 days. Well, I was booked for 2 days. We did all of the command center stuff for the pilot. We did in 2 days. And at the end of that, for the third day, was when they go and they go to the suspect's house. And so they brought about six or seven of us, I guess, back for continuity's sake. And so I was tapped to come back for that third day. And so then we filmed all of that in a neighborhood, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, the other thing that's interesting about you know, acting and doing a movie as opposed to doing a straightforward you know, play or you know, even writing a novel per se is the fact that it's all done out of order.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yes. And it's interesting because it's hard sometimes it's hard when you don't know the story. Like as an extra, that you don't get a copy of the script or anything, so you've just got the bits and pieces that you're seeing filmed to try to put together what's going on. And sometimes, you have to remember. Actually, I just worked on a pilot last night for a pilot that's going to be for USA Network, and we were actually filming on a plane. And it was our second day. I worked on it for 2 days. So it was like, for part of it, it was when we get on the plane, and part of it's after we'd been on the plane a while. So we had to keep track of, was our tie loosened or was our tie, you know, in place? So it was a lot of that. Oh, this scene is 30 minutes later. Okay, everybody's unloosening their ties. Or, oh, we're going back to before. Okay, and everybody's tightening them back up. So, yeah, you have to really keep track of all of that.
So basically it's just like normal air travel that you were in a plane that long.
Yes, we were in a plane. It was a long day. I got to set at 10 a.m., I left set at 2 a.m. to go home. And
wow.
most of that was spent in a plane. So, yes, we could have flown to Hawaii in the time we spent on the plane. So, but it was fun, though. I had fun with that. So hopefully USA will like the pilot and it'll get picked up and you can all see me, you know, you can see me walking down the aisle hitting people with my laptop case, which is basically what I did for most of the day.
Have you ever merged those two sides of your career? Like, have you ever in your writing, like, used, like, what you, like, the concept of, like, an extra or an actor? Like, have you ever incorporated, like, your knowledge from that aspect of your life into your writing at all? Like, made that one of your characters? Or is that something that you just hasn't overlapped at all?
Yeah. I've not written anybody as being an extra. I will say this. When we did The Following, they actually printed up FBI ID tags for us, and we got to write our name, you know, write a character, come up with our characters' names. So I just scribbled down a name that's one of those names. You know, as writers, we always have that box of that list of names in the back of our head. So I just grabbed one, wrote it down,
mm-hmm.
and then earlier this year, had to write a short story that required an FBI agent. So I just had it be the same guy. And that character has kind of grown on me now, so that I do plan on using him in one of the Evil Ways novels. So yeah. So the character who was born, you know, in that So yeah. Sometimes those characters grab you and won't let go.
Oh yes.
Kind of like that. So yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we now know that The Following has its first spinoff.
Yes, exactly. I like to think that they spun off of mine, but, you know.
Nice.
But just don't tell them I said that.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about your Fat Chance movie?
Sure, yeah. That was actually the first thing I've done that had lines. So I had to learn dialogue, which was fun. Fat Chance is a comedy horror movie, but basically it's a big throwback to the 80s type slasher films that were very campy. There's a lot of campiness to it.
Yeah.
It was written and directed by Daniel Emery Taylor and Jim O'Rear. Both are actors who do a lot of horror movies. And you guys have probably seen them around the convention circuit as well. And I've known the guys for years. And when Daniel was first putting the story idea together, he asked if I would be interested. And it just seemed like too fun not to do. So,
that's awesome.
You know, he abused us. I mean, he abused me quite a bit. We spent a week. I spent a week. They filmed longer than that, but. I spent a week down in Marion, Alabama, back in September. They chose September thinking it would be cool. And we were down there in 95-degree weather in the middle of the woods being eat up by bugs and, you know, fending off snakes and spiders. But it was fun. We had a good time. So definitely a lot of running. I had to do a lot of physical comedy. You know, I have to trip and fall. You know, I have other... You know, I actually have a fight scene, other things. I don't want to say that it will spoil the movie, but it was a fun time. I had a ball.
That sounds really cool. We have a question in the chat room for you, Bobby. What's your preferred thing, acting, writing, or comics?
Writing. The acting is fun. It's good to do it. I don't know if it's something I would want to do every day. They are... I have great, after being on set, I have great respect for the people that do this because they work some incredibly long days.
Go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I went to school for theater, so I feel you. I feel like between not only the long days and things like that, but you always have to be, like, pursuing your next, like, five jobs and always have to be on your toes. I can't imagine. It just seems really exhausting.
Yeah, and yeah, very long days, and you know, it is not, like I said, I worked yesterday from 10 a.m. to 2 a.m., and
yeah,
there were people, and the people that, you know, I was doing the work for were there when I got there, and they were there when I left. So, I mean, it's long days, and so I have a newfound respect, you know, for the people that do that type of work, because it is tough. But, you know, writing comics and doing comics, now those are long days too. You
right.
know, they're just long days where I am at my house, because I don't have to actually travel to it and go, God, I'm ready to go home because I'm
right.
there. But, you know, it's not unusual for me to work 10, 12 hours a day. So I mean, I still put in long hours this way. It's just I can do it in sweatpants and a T-shirt, as opposed to when I'm acting and I almost always end up in a suit and a tie, which is about the only time that happens, by the way.
Well, one thing I wanted to bring in, I'd be remiss not to mention, I want to make sure we cover many of the facets of Bobby tonight, but you also host a podcast, and you mentioned it briefly, and I also wanted to give you a chance to, you know, talk a little bit about your podcast and, you know, maybe some of the stuff you guys are cover on the show.
I co-host the Earth Station One podcast. It is a weekly podcast that covers all manner of geekery and pop culture goodness. What we do is a format's pretty standard week to week. We have a section called Rants and Raves where we either rant or rave about something. Each of us is like, usually it's like, oh, I saw this movie and it was great, and we talk about that, or this book is great, or something to that nature. We do interviews with people. One of our more popular segments is the Geek Seat Interview, which is like a standard 10 questions we ask every guest that comes on. And then we do our main topic, which changes from week to week. This particular week, our topic was the history of the character of Wonder Woman. And that actually should go live
nice.
Either tonight or tomorrow. So last week we talked about geeky gift guides for the holidays. Next week we're talking about The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. So we're going to do a movie review and talk about the books and the movies. So we do that, and we do a convention report. And since we're a sci-fi geeky podcast, we call that the Con Report. We spell con like wrath of. So. But,
yeah, you'll have to.
We do that every week. Yeah. So, but we'll put, and the Earth Station One is like the lead show of a network. The ESO network has, I think there's 12 or 13 different podcasts on the network. So, yeah, we've got a little bit of everything. So, they'll kill Director Faber will kill me if I don't throw the link out there, but it's www.esonetwork.com.
Nice.
That way I can,
and that way
I'll stay safe for another week and we'll get edited out of the show.
And there's a new convention that you got to have on your radar for next September now, Imaginarium.
Oh, yeah.
Bobby.
I have heard of that one, yeah. I am very excited.
Yeah,
I am very excited for
Imaginarium. It's going to be great.
All the cool writers are going to be there, so, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it's going to be one of those. It's going to be one of those things. There's nothing like the experience of when you get a lot of writers together.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. There is,
and not just writers.
Something.
We are also going to have, you know, readers, and then we also have the much feared book bloggers out there that make or break all of us poor writers. And to that extent, have a
we'll be out there. We'll be out there buying them drinks and, you know, making them happy. And,
we're going to have you stick on board here with us, Bobby, and participate, but. We want to bring in our book blogging guest for the week. This is Alex Momcat of Alex Momcat's Gateway Book Blog, a great great book blog, and we're going to be very, very happy to have Alex as one of our book blogging guests at Imaginarium, which is going to be wonderful. But before Alex actually comes on the show, we understand that her mother, Almeda, has a birthday tonight. So we're going to make history here at the Star Chamber Show and quickly sing Alex's mother, Almeda, happy birthday. So let's go, everybody. One, two, three. Happy birthday,
happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday
to you. Happy birthday, dear Almeda.
Happy birthday to you.
This is why we're writers.
Welcome aboard, Alex. How'd you like that?
this is why we are writers and not singers.
Oh, yes. Goodness. Stop. That's why I cut out, because I couldn't even find the key with you guys in there.
Wait, and now Sharon
will
get the...
Well, that's one way to start the evening.
Now Stephen will get the bill from the writer of Happy Birthday for the...
Oh, God. That's right.
Can you edit that out for the download?
Oh God, I thought that was public domain.
We're supposed to. You need to add claps and like ole or something to it at the end.
Oh right, yeah.
You guys are crazy.
Well, tell us a little bit, first of all, about your blog, and give us an idea of the kind of things you cover and review on there.
Well, I started reviewing before I actually started the blog. I was reviewing for Romance in the Backseat, which seems to have disappeared off the face of the earth. But then I decided, you know what, I wasn't, I liked the idea of picking and choosing what I wanted to do instead of saying, hey, you need to review this. So I started my own, and I have a lot of fun doing it. I review a lot of different genres, sci-fi, fantasy, some more adult genres.
Spicy stuff.
Yeah, some of the spicy. I've actually reviewed a movie or two, which was fun. It was a step out of my comfort zone, kind of like it was to review your book, Stephen. It was not a genre I normally read, so... But it turned out it was phenomenal, so.
Well, thank you.
But I have fun doing it.
Very cool. No, it's a very good blog, and I definitely recommend people to go there. But you've expanded since then. I mean, I know you are also a writer, and then you've also gotten into beta reading.
Right.
And I know you're pretty big on beta reading, and so I know Selah and Mike and I are, you know, we all work with people that read our stuff. So let's get a little conversation going about your beta reading and how the dynamics of that work with authors.
Wow, I've actually, it's Stephen's fault in some ways that I got in, it was at Fandom Fest that I actually started doing. Some beta reading. The first year I went, I got a chance to meet the wonderful author, one of my favorite authors, Shirley Damsgaard, and sat down and started talking to her over coffee, and it kind of became history. I started beta reading for her, and I beta read for Stephanie Rowe and Angie Fox and several authors, and I love doing it.
No, it's a very valuable thing because
it's
not just reading. It's really getting at it from a very critical kind of standpoint, almost like a little bit of a. I almost look at it like a little bit of a like an editing kind of feedback, almost content wise. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you?
Well, it's kind of like getting the it's good to get in the headspace of a reader before you turn it into either your publisher, editor, or you submit it or something. Like, it's good to, you know, as much as we as writers love our stuff, we can't always take that, you know, sit across the table from ourselves and see it either objectively just because we've been in the world for so long. So it's really nice to have someone who can do that and catch any continuity stuff or anything like that at all. It's really helpful.
Okay. Absolutely.
And as far as... Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Sue.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I know in my circle of pre-readers, I would, if anybody could really, you know, you could give it to anyone and have someone say, oh, I loved it, it was great, or I hated it, it stinks. But, you know, when you get that actual feedback that says, well, I don't think this character would do this because X, I really want to know more about this person. I don't, you know, I know you know what's going on, but I don't know it, and I think I need to know it, and things of that nature, you know, just to really flesh out where it's going and what it's all about.
Or that I didn't understand this part.
Right.
That's the one I always like. Because if someone, even though it, you know, I know what I'm writing, if someone doesn't understand it, that means that if one person doesn't understand it, there's probably others that won't, that I probably need to give that section a look.
Exactly.
You're not, you're in your headspace. The reader isn't in your headspace. The reader doesn't know necessarily the backstory that you've created for that character. And if I don't understand why the character is doing something, you know, it can really ruin a story for me if there's no reason.
Right. Well, so often, like, as writers, like, we get in our headspace, but it's interesting because, like, depending on the beta reader, you guys have your own personal experiences doing stuff, and sometimes you guys catch ways to make a problem or a quirk that we may have with a plot or a character, like, makes sense that we may not have caught because it's not in our realm of experience. So that's always nice, too, to be able to have someone to, I mean, whether we take the idea or not, to just be like, hey, did you think of this? Or, hey, what about this? This might make a little more sense to smooth this out. Like, it's really, really nice to get someone that you can have that kind of conversation with.
But you've got to be careful as a beta reader on how you approach the author, because it's not my story, it's your story, and so for me to just sit there and say, hey, why don't you do this? And it's not where it's at. I want to say, hey, this is what I'm seeing. You know, is there a way it can be, maybe you can make this better? Maybe you're happy with it. And if it reads fine, you know, then you have to make that decision as an author as whether you're going to take that piece. But you can't force something on the author. I've seen that happen too.
Yeah, I have had a beta reader before that you know, we went through a draft. And they made their suggestions, and then I, you know, some of them I really liked, and some of them, even though they may have been true, I felt that artistically that it worked better the way it was that I had it. And so then they read the revised edition, and they're like, well, why didn't you do this? I said to and I had to sit down and explain to them. It's like going, well, you're right. It may not actually work that way, but it worked better to do it the way that I did it as far as the way that the story works out. And so, I mean, they understood after I explained it to them, but at first they just were feeling like I was ignoring their their input.
All I'm doing is giving a suggestion. You know, I can't tell the author to do this or do that. There are some things that, you know, a beta reader will catch that the editor didn't even catch. And it could be something as simple as a word choice. You know, like you have 30 of the same words in 10 pages, you know, and it just like
yeah.
an overuse, like, you know.
Right.
Quickly.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Even as mine, like I was editing something last year and like I must have used the word even like 500,000 times. I wanted to beat myself in the face when I had to edit that. It was, I don't know how I did that, but it was awful.
Yeah, mine was. I had, you know, like was used way too often.
Yeah, that's one of the ones I've been caught for too. I've been called to the mat on that overuse as well.
Well, and sometimes an editor won't catch a continuity thing. I, in the one series that I've been beta reading, it's a group of immortal characters who all have weapons to call that are kind of brands on their skin, and the weapons pop out when they need them, you know, when they call them, and the author had the wrong weapon with the wrong character. And I'm like, that's a huge thing for readers, you know.
Right.
You know, and so you want to be able to catch that before it goes into print. And her editor hadn't caught it.
Wow.
Yeah, I had something similar happen. It was a story issue where I had thought that a story from a previous book, a backstory, was one thing. And when I wrote, like, the third book in the series, I wrote it the way I remembered it. And then one of my beta readers came back and said, if you look at the original book, it didn't happen that way. And luckily, this was before Seven Star re-released the first book, so I got to go back and change the first book so it matched the third book.
Yes, that's one benefit of reissues. You can make a few
yes.
changes.
Mm-hmm.
And mistakes happen. You know, I don't think there's a single book out there that is absolutely perfect. You know, I've seen, you know, errors in New York Times bestsellers, you know?
Oh, yeah,
so,
definitely.
I think I've yet to read a major press release that doesn't have at least an error or two that I catch in it. I mean, it happens, like, all the time something slips under the radar. I'm convinced there's some kind of little gnome or something that's responsible for, or gremlin that's responsible for these things, because it's uncanny. I mean, everybody, you know, staring at this project forever, and author, editor, readers, beta readers, and something inevitably slips through, and it's pretty amazing how that happens.
Yeah, and oftentimes, especially with the big presses, you know, they have 14 different editors going through a manuscript, and yet nobody catches it.
Well, I had an editor that I worked with who had been with a New York press, they worked on a Major Stars biography. It wasn't an autobiography, but it was a biography. And it talked about the first line of the biography talked about her public, but they left the L out. and nobody caught it before it went to press.
Oh, man.
Oh,
man.
God.
Oh, my God.
I think I would die of embarrassment.
I'm sure, if I remember the story correctly, some people did lose their job over it, but...
Yeah, I would think so, because that's a big deal. You know, you know, if you don't, you have to catch your public in the first couple of lines.
You're right.
Well, one thing I wanted to also make sure we get into the conversation, in addition to beta reading, is your approach to reviewing. That's something that a lot of authors, you know, like to hear about, is how a book reviewer approaches their own review style and forming that. So maybe if you could just talk a little bit about your personal style of reviewing, that would be awesome.
I think the first thing I would always tell an author before I even agree to do a review, and some understand this and others don't. It's my that review is my opinion, and you know, I'm going to be honest. If I like it, I like it. If I don't, there are times when I won't necessarily post if I really dislike a story. I'm not going to slam an author. I refuse to slam an author because I try and keep a positive line of communication open. But I will let them know because it's my opinion. And, you know, the way I handle it is usually it's just not for me because it could be wonderful for someone else, but I also won't review anything I don't read these days. There was a time when I got a NASCAR romance. just picture it, guys. It really is as bad as it sounds. But you know, I sent it back. I could not finish the book. I couldn't finish it. But you know, I try to take authors one day at a time, or one moment at a time, because you know, and I take each request. And look at it, and whether I have time or I always tell them, you know, I will get to it as soon, you know, if they need it right away frequently, then probably I'm not necessarily the best reviewer because I have a day job. You know, I can't sit here for hours and hours and hours just doing nothing but reading. There are a lot of reviewers who read 10, 12 books in a week. I can't do that. I don't have that kind of time. But I'm thorough. There are so many different aspects to a review. And it's got to be. It's not about the author. It's about the book.
And do you have a certain not a formula for your reviews, but are there certain kind of flow to your reviews, or are they each kind of different stylistically?
I would have to say it also depends on the genre, because there are some genres. For example, Stephen, you write the epic fantasy, which there's a lot more detail. It's a lot more detail oriented,
mm-hmm.
versus, you know, a contemporary romance.
Sure. And we actually have a question out of the chat room. Just came in for you, Alex. They want to know: do you think conventions are useful for bloggers, and in that, can they connect with readers in the convention environment? So in other words, just talk about the use of conventions for bloggers and how they can connect with writers.
Well, if you are some bloggers like to hide behind their computer. So if you're the type of person that doesn't communicate well outside, you know, having a screen to hide behind, then conventions aren't going to work for you because you actually have to interact and talk to people. If you're a loudmouth like me who has no problem going up to people and just getting in their face saying, hey, I'm me, and hand you my card and say, send me an email and maybe I can review your book or maybe we can do an interview. But, yeah, I think it can also connect you with readers. You know, I think I probably – even at Fandom Fest the last time we were there and at Archon here in St. Louis, I probably handed out probably 200 of my business cards, and it has increased my readership.
That's awesome. We have another question in the chat room. What do you find more useful, reviews on blog sites, Amazon, or Goodreads?
I avoid Goodreads like the plague. It has... I've seen too much ugliness on Goodreads, although Amazon can be very much the same, but it is, it's a more, it's more toned down. People don't get quite as nasty as I've seen on Amazon as they do on Goodreads.
What do you think that is? Like, is that just where they feel more comfortable to express their true opinion? Or why is it about Goodreads that suddenly, like, people who leave reviews slant them differently than anywhere else?
I don't know that it's that. I just think because for so long, and since Amazon bought it, I don't know if it's going to be changing. It hasn't from what I've seen so far. It's you get a lot of trolls
mm-hmm.
who, you know, for, you know, they for example, there was a bunch of erotica authors on Goodreads, and if you went and looked, it was the same person who would put a one star in every single author's, every book would put one star, simply maybe because they don't, you know, they're a they don't like erotica or, you know, or whatever. But, and oftentimes on Goodreads, it doesn't require you to actually put any kind of review. You can put one star and not say a word.
Yeah.
And for a long time, it allowed you to be anonymous. You know, I mean, we all know that it's possible to set up 200 different email accounts if you want to. Okay, and you can, and each of those email accounts could be a person on Goodreads.
Mm-hmm.
So, with Amazon, it's a little different. It has to go along with an account.
Right.
So you know, I think.
A lot of times on Amazon, what you'll even see next to the review, you know, verified purchase, so you know that the person writing the review has actually at least bought the book, even if they they didn't read it all the way through, they at least bought it.
Right.
Okay,
although,
guys,
unfortunately...
No, go ahead,
go
Alex.
Ahead.
You're good. No, I was just going to give it away about 2:30, so I just want to make sure that we wrap up if we have anything to wrap up, but go ahead and finish what you were going to say.
Just real quick, unfortunately, with Amazon... also has the lending program,
mm-hmm.
which can also be slightly problematic for people as far as, you know, are they borrowing it and or are they buying it an ebook and then returning it because, you know, and whether or not, you know, they've actually read the book, you don't know. You don't know. And that's sometimes frequently a problem with some authors. That's one of the – or some reviewers. That's why I take my time reviewing a book, because I want the author to know that I actually took the time to read the book.
Awesome. We're at 1:30. Stephen, anything you want to say to wrap up?
Well, I think that we should give both Bobby and Alex a quick chance to give their links out before we wrap up. So go ahead, guys, give out your links to your blogs and sites real quick.
Alex, I'll let you go first.
Okay. It's Alex Momcat's Gateway Book Blog at blogspot.com. Come on over and check us out.
And Bobby?
You can find me at bobbynash.com. You know, I'm also all over Facebook, Twitter, Google+, et cetera, et cetera. You know, if there's one out there, I've probably got a presence somewhere. And then every week I'm on the ESO podcast, which is esonetwork.com.
Awesome. Well, I think it's been a great show, guys. I think we had a lot of fun and covered quite a bit of ground. And And next week, I want to give a quick shout-out that our guest next week will be H. David Blaylock as our author guest, and Sharon Stogner from I Smell Sheep coming in as our guest. So, yeah, thank you very much on behalf of Selah and Michael, and thank you, Bobby. Thank you, Alex. It's been a great, great time having you guys on the third episode of the Star Chamber Show. So have a good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night.